Welcome to Sex Psychic Psychedelics. I'm Jane Garnett, a licensed psychotherapist, and I'm here to accelerate your personal growth. Because life is too short to not get turned on. Yes, amazing. So welcome to Sex Psychic Psychedelics. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really happy to have you. No, so happy to have you. And I want to start off with a little story about how I first heard about you, because this is really, to me, where your credibility comes from. I mean, since this moment, I followed you and I've gotten to know more about your work and I've shared your work more with other people. But I think we trust things when we hear them from our friends, you know? Long story short, right? It's one thing seeing someone on the internet, and it's another thing hearing about it from a close friend. So I was at a burlesque show meeting a great friend of mine, and I love watching burlesque. I mean, I just love watching sexy women dance around, and men and whatever, but in this case it was women. And so normally you can't distract me from that at all, like, you know.
Showtime, you're honed in.
I'm honed in. I'm like totally focused on the bodies. But my friend wanted to give me this download as we were watching this show. And she said, look, I've just had my world rocked. She told me that she'd been working with you and that it had unleashed this enormous amount of emotion in her, as well as it being a, you know, obviously an incredibly sexual experience. She really was released. And as she described this to me, I kind of stopped looking at all the tits and ass for a second. And I, can you believe it? And I realized that her story was turning me on even more. I was like, God damn it, I seem to care.
Doesn't it suck when that happens?
I was just in pure objectification, and then other things happen. And and I thought about how you had, you know, enabled her to really express, you know, all of the deep and complex feelings that we do hold as humans, and that can, with the right kind of sex, be opened up and released. And I think that's what sexual healing seems to be about. And so hearing about you in this context, as I was learning about different sexual healing modalities, you know, made me reach out. And finally, I now have you on the show. So thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for helping my friend. And thank you for being here as a resource for all of us.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you for sharing about that. And also, I'm really happy that your friend felt courageous to share about their experience, and that it was something that was impactful for them. That fills my heart. I would say what the work that I do, you know, is in some ways it's selfish, because I feel so good when I hear someone having a breakthrough like that. Because I can't tell you how many times I wish I would have had some form of mentor or guide or someone in my journey to kind of help me understand a lot of like my own sexual like dysfunctionality, hangups, all the things. And I didn't, and I had to figure it out on my own, and it was clunky, and I made a lot of mistakes. I'll probably make a lot of mistakes along the way too.
I was going to say, I think clunkiness and sex often go together, and we want to allow for that, right? Because it's this mm-hmm. idea that it all needs to be smooth and seamless can be a bit of a setup. And I know we want to talk about performance and play, but you just brought up something pretty interesting to me, which is your own sexual history and feeling like you were working with some hangups. What could you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure. I can say that my journey of my own like sexuality, like discovering my own sexuality, was not like seamless or smooth. You know, I remember being younger, like middle school, early high school, like having desires for more than just one like sexual gender, like that I had interest in men but didn't know that I could explore that. And I knew that I wasn't gay because I also really enjoyed the company and the romantic, like physical intimacy of women. But at a time back in 1999, maybe around, like, so it's been some time. I'm 40 yeah. now. I don't think we had the language, or we didn't have, like, that was definitely not one of the classes that I had in my high school yeah. education. So that was kind of like finding that own discovery on my own was challenging, because I didn't know if I could share that openly. Like, I was afraid of what, you know, what that stigma would be. And especially as someone who I consider myself like a multisexual being, meaning that, like, again, I like to move in and out of different, like, sexual orientations, that there's also stigma around people who might even be bisexual, that, oh, you're just pick a team, pick a side, like,
any side. Totally. Yeah, I had yeah. the same thing. I mean, I always had crushes on women. And as I started to explore them, I got shit from the guys, and I didn't want to lose the guys. So I was like, mm-hmm. okay. It was only when much later life, that I was like, oh, these doors aren't actually permanently shut just because I decided at age 11 that they were, you know, whatever it was. But
you mean you grew and you changed past the age of 11? No way.
A little bit, babe, a little bit. Yes. I'm doing this whole show, all this work on myself, tons of drugs, and at some point something shifts a little bit.
Amazing.
It is funny. I do think that is a really funny thing about humans, isn't it? That we can do so much work on ourselves, but still personality. We're still butt up against our own personalities and our own proclivities and, you know, jumping around. But I was just thinking about, you know, it was Valentine's Day yesterday, as I'm sure you were aware. And, yes. you know, I think I've done all of this work on myself, but I still, and that I'm so open-minded, but I still want what I want. You know, yeah. I still, you know, I ended up having like a tiff with my boyfriend because I hadn't received whatever it was that I thought that I should receive, that I also thought that I shouldn't care about at this point in my life. But you're like, okay, but part of me is still 12, you know, so.
Sure.
Or part of me is still a woman, or part of me is still a romantic, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'll be the first to say that I have this notion and this idea, and I feel this when I have interactions with anyone, is that we're all big kids. Like, we can call ourselves adults. We can say, oh, we've grown up and we're more mature and all of these things. But at the core of us, we all have that little person inside of us that maybe didn't have enough attention or liked all of the attention that we had then, and maybe it's not as much now, or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, we like to think that we, like, have to, like, be, like, very performative in, you know, life, and, like, have, like, a certain, like, persona and this mask, and be behind that, we're still, like, you know, the scared little girl, boy, we're still, like, we have that playful side, and sometimes we let it out. Drugs help.
Sex can. The right kind of sex can help. Drugs can help.
Yes. Yeah. All of those can help, but yeah, it's access to that play side of us is what we're all trying to get to, but we've created so many layers and layers of, like, life just kind of beating us down. Where, like, the adult piece comes in.
Absolutely. I mean, I think to the adult that's been kind of created through culture over time of necessity, the child might seem threatening. Because I think on mm-hmm. some level, we know that our inner children, that the child inside, I prefer that expression actually, that the child inside is really strong. So you and I can say, yeah, we want to get to play in sex. And I definitely agree with that, and play in life, just, you know, beyond sex. But to get to that playfulness, you got to get through the other stuff that the child is feeling, which often is not so pleasant or so mm-hmm. noble, you know, that the kind of the adult doesn't really, you know, necessarily approve of. So, like, my adult doesn't approve of how sort of insistent my six-year-old is on, you know, my inner six-year-old is on, like, getting what she wants. Like, I'm, you know, I'm a little bit embarrassed. I think it's a little antisocial. It's a bit greedy, needy, greedy and needy and antisocial. And there it is. And it doesn't go away. So I can, you know, I can shame myself and blame myself and argue things a million sophisticated adult ways. But I still like what I like. I still want what I want. And what I'm discovering, Andre, and I wonder what you have to say about this, but for me in relationships, I'm finding it a lot easier just to kind of get to the point. Like, it saves me a lot of time. If I can get over the embarrassment of admitting what I feel like I want or I need, even if it feels kind of infantile, and often it does, to be honest, then I can get on to the other good bits, having a laugh, playing, communicating. But if I'm trying to hide those bits, I'm screwed.
Yeah. I think it's the evolution of life experiences that show us that while we can play games, while we can, like, beat around the bush and kind of, like, give a little bit of information, that, like you said, when we're more, like, forward and direct and to the point, we might get the same end conclusion, but we'll maybe get it a little bit faster, rather than like, maybe I shouldn't text her because we just, you know, had our date last night, and you're supposed to wait 3 days, and and you're supposed to wait like 6 weeks before you kiss someone, like whatever story you might have. When you can, like, very directly say after, like, the second date or whenever, I find you really attractive and I really wanted to kiss you for some time, and would you be open to that? Rather than like, maybe I need to, like, wait longer or wait until they kiss me and all these things. So that directness and allowing ourselves the ability to, like, be more frank and forward as adults, I think that's the piece that we get as adults, is we now have maybe less tolerance for the bullshit and can get to the root of the feeling.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think what you're talking about, what we're talking about, does require bravery and practice, which is, you know, to really communicate honestly with another human being, you know, is usually more the terrain of therapists and healers, you know, than like your average everyday. But we're all in the same boat. I was just sitting next to some women at lunch, you know, trying not to overhear their conversation, but listening avidly as they discuss their relationship issues. And I was like, it was such a classic conversation, because they were talking about whether this one woman should text this guy, should reach out first to towards this guy that she was attracted to. She's worried he's going to reject her. The other woman's saying, yeah, but at least you'll know. And they're both agreeing about this. But they have the conversation like 10 times over, because it's not like, it's just not that easy, right? And because it, not just because it's not easy to put yourself on the line, but also because we don't necessarily want the results. And, you know, and I think we need to think about that rejection, right? Sometimes we'd rather keep the, sometimes we'd rather keep the fantasy alive than get rejected.
Yeah, well, I'll speak for myself. Like, even though I have practice in rejection 10 times over, it's still not like the most fun feeling when there's something that you want, and then that thing that you want, again, going back to that, how did you say, not inner child, the child inside?
The child inside, yeah.
Yeah. The child inside, you're like kind of stamping your feet, like, oh man, I really wanted that and I can't have that. What a bummer. Yeah. That can compound depending on what your experience has been like with rejection, or your experience, what it's been like, you know, having any form of, like, human connection. So being able to, like, protect that child inside from getting hurt, it's so much easier to just, like, not communicate that, or just say, that wouldn't have worked out anyway, so I'm glad I didn't pursue that, or that woman or man at the bar who I really wanted to go talk to, they probably have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, and so that's why I didn't do it. And it's safer in many aspects, and you know, are we then at the end of the day, do we feel satisfied in that experience to say we tried, or this thing that we wanted that we didn't have, I'm okay with that? Or am I really not okay? Am I really wanting that guy to call me? Or am I really wanting to, you know, create the experiences that I really, really want? But it's a lot of the things that we do in life, we do because we're afraid of the other side, afraid of that rejection, afraid of the outcome. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that sometimes that fear is so strong that we're not even necessarily honest with ourselves. So I think that's one thing that we can all potentially practice if we're interested in it, is being honest with ourselves. I mean, that's something I try and do as a practice, is to be like, at least just look at it, just start there, just look at it, whatever it is, mm-hmm. right? But I want to bring up something that's going to be probably a little uncomfortable for you, or it might be. My anticipation is this is going to be uncomfortable for you, but I don't
okay.
know.
Hold on, take a deep breath.
Okay, so we're talking about rejection, and we're talking about being brave and coming onto people. And what's coming up in my mind is, well, yeah, but he has a perfect body. We see it. Sorry to tell you such a terrible thing, but the bad news. But we see you on Instagram, and you know, partly this is my jealousy that you get to be naked on Instagram and I don't, because you're a fucking man. Okay, so
I'm sorry
you do.
About that. I am. I
yeah,
really am.
Right, about the nakedness bit. Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Me too. But I'm not sorry that you have a perfect body. I'm happy for you, and I'm happy for us that we get to see it. But it does make a difference. When you come on to people, you are less likely to be rejected than your average male, let's be honest. What do we do about this?
You're starting with the easy questions. I appreciate that. I thought we, you know, good thing that wasn't a challenging one. First, thank you for the compliment. I want to say
welcome.
That I appreciate you reflecting back what you see of me. And this might be interesting for the people listening, and even for yourself, but I don't see that attraction in myself all the time. It took me a long time to see myself the way that people were describing me. Mm-hmm. So while you might say, like, I have this perfect body, or like, I look good, and then, you know, my rejection, like, you know, is probably going to be less than like your average person, the way that I saw or see myself at times is not having a perfect body. I'm looking at myself and questioning, like, oh, you know, where is that pizza gonna go in my body? And maybe I'm feeling a little bit more pudgy than I normally look, and ooh, I don't know if I want to share that on like social media. I go through these same feelings of insecurity and unsuredness, and that carries over into how I interact with people. So even though you might see the most beautiful person at the bar and just imagine like, oh, they must get hit on all the time, or they just might have all the success when it comes to like, you know, meeting people, there's actually people who are that like beautiful and never talk to anyone or never get approached because
they're too beautiful.
That person about to approach them is like, oh, I'm out of their league. So it might sound like it's like, it could be something easier, like for, you know, someone who might be like visually like more appealing to like have more of a success rate. But it really comes down to that person's individual confidence. Some of the most beautiful people I know who are models, literal models who you see walking runways, who you see on magazines. These are friends of mine that I've known for years and are some of the most insecure individuals on the planet. And then you might take someone who from like, you know, what we like to think of as like culture or pop media standards might be more in the middle range of like a 5 or a 6, are hitting it out of the park every time that they connect with someone, that they have this courage, they have this gusto, they have this personality that says, I feel beautiful. I know I'm sexy. I don't need you to tell me I'm sexy. I know I am. And when you carry that confidence,
yeah,
it's a completely different ball game. So I don't know if that fully answered your question, but I would say that while being Chris Hemsworth, 6'4", blonde, beautiful muscles, perfect hair, might like be like the archetype of like, oh, this person never strikes out. You don't have to look like that in order to find companionship, to find human connection, to find someone else who can like bring you to life. I also know a lot of beautiful people who I've dated and who I've been in intimate experiences with who were shit in bed, who were boring as fuck. And being honest, honest, like, and they fell back on the way that they looked as like, they don't have to try as hard because of the way they look. So it really is full spectrum.
No, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I mean, I'm talking to you from Los Angeles. So, you know, looks are a pretty big deal here. I mean, as in the whole world, but definitely here. And there's this maxim I heard recently that there are good Californians and there are good looking Californians. Or there are good looking Californians. But basically, you know, the point being like, yeah, good looks can be destructive, right? There's something to work around and they can, yeah, they can go hand in hand with being a bit lazy or being a bit not connected to because of other people's projections. And projections are really a big deal. And I think we have to assume that we're projecting a lot on everything most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's sort of like, how do we connect through the maze of our own projections about, you know, our own self-worth or their self-worth? You know, how do we go about it? I mean, I think confidence seems to be a beautiful key. I was thinking of a friend of mine while you were talking who describes herself as a 7 who thinks she's a 10. And she she is like one that. Of the most sexy women I know. She just has made a decision that she's the hottest thing since sliced bread, if that was hot or whatever, but hottest thing on this planet. And she is, you know? It's a beautiful thing. I don't think it's just about sort of announcing that you're sexy. It's about aliveness. I think it's about claiming aliveness, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's very important.
Well, the self-worth piece that you shared, that's a big one. I would say, when we can love ourselves, and I know that that's very like general and maybe, you know, a bit mushy, but like when we can spend time with ourselves, spend time with our thoughts, like, you know, enjoy the company of others, but not like need or like feed that all the time, then we're starting from like a foundation of, okay, like you said, it's not always having to feel sexy or always having to feel confident, but like knowing that I am enough for myself, that I can laugh at my own jokes, that I can enjoy reading a book with just me.
Yeah.
Then when we come to these interactions, we're not always having like fill a hole to say like, I need my happiness, my turn on, my joy is determined by this person, not by myself. And that's, I'll speak again for myself. Like, I've definitely had that in like the connections that I've shared with some people. Like, there was something that I wasn't feeling fully like embodied in or feeling confident in, or something that was like a hole that this other person helped to fill. And that's okay as well. But if all I was doing was like creating that connection to fill that hole when that person wasn't around, oh shit, now it's that hole is empty again. So I would say like the self-worth piece, like again, like knowing that you are enough and starting from that standpoint will then allow you maybe a little bit more room in the way that you connect to not so much need to have that fulfilled by someone else, get to join them in their experience.
Mm. Yeah, I really like what you're saying, particularly the bit about reading a book. It's been on my mind recently. I've been practicing reading again, and it is a practice to be still and sit by yourself and read a book. It's a wonderful yes. thing, and actually a difficult thing to get back into, because we're such stimulation junkies. We, meaning me, I'll just speak for myself. But anyway, look, I think I like the idea of it as a practice, because the practice of enoughness. Why I'm using those words is I think it can be hard to feel like enough, and it can even be a bit of a vague or overwhelming concept. You know, what does it really mean to be enough? But I suppose to practice being okay with your own company, to practice enjoying your own company, and to practice being with feelings of emptiness. I mean, I think I'm glad you brought up this kind of the void and the enoughness. It's something I wanted to talk to you about. I've been thinking about something that one of my teenage daughters said. They always just nail it really fast. And she said to me, oh, women who haven't had fathers or haven't had good relationships with their fathers are always seeking validation of some kind from men. Now, that describes me in a nutshell. I mean, I don't think just from men. I think, you know, in general, I had that void in my life, and it's made men a bit disproportionate. I mean, I don't think it's just men, but it's sort of men in general have been my romantic focus. And just because of the pairing of a father and a male lover, you know, there's some equivalence there. And it just, when you have a big gap, I think, in the sort of parent archetype, it can get a bit swimmy, because you start to tangle romantically. Those old gaps come up, and they're big gaps. I mean, I think we all have them in some way, right? But I think if you've had a very significant gap in your life, like a massive disappointment on a parent front, then the fantasy of having that fulfilled is that much wilder. It's harder to see the romantic other as a normal, flawed human being like oneself. There's this thought, oh, maybe, you know, here's this completeness, this nirvana, this thing I can resolve. And I don't think that's toxic, although we tell ourselves it's toxic because it's uncomfortable. But I think it's natural to want that resolution. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, I'm thinking about women and men, but I don't know if it applies to all of us, or what do you think?
Yeah, no, but it's so interesting how oftentimes I hear either my clients or even people in my life say, like, I ended up marrying my mother, or I ended up dating my father. And there's, I think, again, going back to like childhood, there might have been aspects that we thought like, oh, I didn't have this like certain type of attention from my mother or my father. So I'm going to like fill that hole or fill that need in this relationship. And because we are so accustomed to like our upbringing of like what we learn from our parents, from our teachers, from our friends, just how much escaping that is challenging. I can say like for like in almost every relationship, I was like, and I love mom, I love you, but you know, we've had like our own like challenging relationship, and I'm like, I'm not going to date my mom. I am not like, there's things that I just know that I want that is different from that mother son relationship that I'm going to have here. And I'm going to make sure that I avoid that. And I'm going to do all the checks and balances and make sure I screen this person and eventually find out like, oh yeah, there are a lot of aspects. It's that existential kink piece. Like, it's the thing that we say that we don't want, and we try to, and then we fight, but it ends up coming through as like, what is it? Like the shadow piece of us, like actually desiring that.
Right. Like the return of the repressed. Is it that kind of thing? I love the phrase existential kink, by the way. I know there's a book called that, but I haven't read it.
It is. It's fabulous. Yeah.
Okay, so the idea of existential kink is we try and avoid, but it's the avoidance is magnetic, so we're always kind of drawn back to the unresolved piece.
Yeah, it's this thing that we say we don't want, or this thing that, for instance, like, if you're in every relationship that you're in, there's a moment or moments of jealousy that you have with that particular partner, because they're maybe like more of a playboy or a playgirl, and they're looking outward more, and you're like, why do I keep finding the same person, and why do I keep doing that? Well, why is it that you're running into the same archetype over and over? Is it actually something you enjoy? Is there some enjoyment, even though it's uncomfortable to feel jealous, that you actually, on the flip side, this is something that is like a kink of yours? Like,
it's addictive, isn't it? Jealousy, a little bit.
Yeah, I would say.
I mean, you're such a non-jealous person, right? Because you're in this whole like non-monogamy world. I'm in jealousy world over here, okay?
So, well, I'll say
from jealousy world, you know.
I lean more towards the non-jealous, but I get jealous. Mm. It happens, yeah. And it's a feeling that happens generally if there's something not being met in the relationship. And so it's either we're not getting fulfillment, we're not getting the attention we want. Maybe there is like a fear of being replaced, but jealousy, I could say in some ways it could be like addictive. I would also say that most people that I know who are jealous wish they were not. So,
yeah, I think, okay, so this is, you know, just getting into my personal stuff, but I guess I'm not the only person on the planet with this experience. But for me, if I'm really into someone, and this particularly goes with that sort of early stages, very, you know, excited feeling, it's sort of a way of re-experiencing the excitement or the level that you're into that person. It's almost like a game that I play with myself to gauge my level of intense attraction. That if I think about that person being with this other person who I think is also attractive, then I'm like, I get my flamenco dress out, you know? I'm just like, rah. It does. I think it's like, it does like get some like hormonal.
The fan.
I could see you getting...
Yes. Well, actually, if you're open to sharing.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if it's, I wouldn't consider it silly. I consider it.
No, I mean,
like,
it's just embarrassing. It's not. Yeah. It's embarrassing. Yeah.
Like for you, like in the moments of jealousy that like the most recent one that you can think about, or even in this hypothetical, what is it that you were not getting in that experience that allowed that jealousy to come through? Or what was the concern? What was the fear that made jealousy like rear its, I don't want to say ugly head, just rear its head?
I think it's a combination of turn on and fear. I think the fear is of being unsafe. The fear is of losing the person to somebody else.
Yeah.
The desire is in my mind's eye, seeing them get naked with somebody else. Right. So, yeah, so that's sexy, because if, I mean, I'm just not, it's, I try and work my way into my own fantasies, but generally I'm more like the voyeur and the director. So I like it, you know, this person and this person or whatever it is. And then I'm like, I literally am like, oh, just pop yourself in there, get in there. Cause you know, don't be too voyeuristic. Cause I've noticed that's my tendency. So yeah. So some of it's like an old default, like the way the cinematic, voyeuristic way that my sexual mind works, and some of it's a game around safety.
Yeah, well, like, you know,
I will always lose by the way in my mind. Right, because there'll always be someone in my mind who's going to be more potentially attractive and therefore a threat.
Sure. And that's that existential kink piece is that, like you said, like, while that feeling of jealousy might not always feel good, and maybe sometimes you wish you didn't feel it, there's also the other side of like, oh, is this actually like a turn on? Is this a way that I can like access some new sensation or a feeling that I haven't had in a while, because maybe like relationship's been ongoing and things get stale, but like being able to like feel this like twinge of jealousy now can like you know, come from the other side and use that in your intimacy, in your eroticism. Like, there are people that love to like role play the idea of even like of a partner cheating on them, maybe not doing it actually, but just the role play itself. And that's a turn on. It's the forbidden, it's the forbiddenness of it. So I relate to that.
But in non-monogamy, which you are in, I guess you're not using jealousy so much as a tool for glue in a way. I mean, it seems like jealousy might be quite a common monogamy kind of trick of some kind.
Yeah, it's jealousy is very common in non-monogamy as well.
I mean, I think that's why I don't go there. I'm just like, I'd get way too jealous. I don't think I can
But where I feel there is a different perspective, and also one that I see people who are practicing non-monogamy do, I don't want to say better, just maybe a little bit more advanced, is talking about it.
Yeah.
So when we're jealous in monogamous relationships, sometimes we'll just keep it to ourselves.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, I had this feeling, or I saw my boyfriend or my girlfriend looking at that person, and I felt this thing, but I'm not going to share because it doesn't matter because they're mine and yada, yada.
Well, yeah. Also because it's embarrassing. What are you going to do? I mean, it takes a lot of awareness and consciousness and ability to communicate to say, oh, I felt my body stiffen when I saw your eyes slide towards that woman in the dress in the restaurant.
That's right? The piece I'm about to get to is the communication. Okay,
yeah.
And generally in the non-monogamy open relating world, communication, like, even like challenging communication is encouraged because that's how we can work through and better understand these experiences rather than trying to solve it on our own. And then our lizard brain gets turned on. And then now we're even more like fuming. Mm-hmm. But again, we don't have the language or feeling the safety to share that with our partner because, again, the dynamic might not allow that. But with open relating, when we have that ability, depending on what the dynamic is, to share these experiences, both physically as well as emotionally with other people. When jealousy comes up, we now have more of this landscape to feel safe to share about these experiences because we're in it. We're not like, it's not this hypothetical, oh, what if? It's like, oh, this can actually happen. So let's actually talk about it and work through it. I would say, you know, the marriage that I had, you know, prior to my partnership, we communicated, but I definitely held a lot of personal things back that I was feeling because I was afraid that I was going to hurt her feelings, or I was afraid that she wasn't going to be able to hold my process. And then now I'm going through my experience and I'm having to hold her as well.
Was that true, or is that an assumption that you were making?
Yeah, good question. Both. Because I would say I could have given her more of the opportunity to show up for me, and I was, like, quote-unquote, protecting that.
Yeah.
And there were times that I did, and what came through was kind of like my fear, which was, again, not really fully being able to, like, hear me and feeling a lot of like of her own emotion around the emotions I was feeling. Mm-hmm, human beings, we're messy. Like, we can read all the books, we can listen to all the podcasts, we can go to all the workshops, we can become sex gods, and we are still just scratching the surface because every human being that we interact with is different. So say you and I were having like a, you know, physical, intimate like relationship, and I knew just how to please you and you knew just what to do to get me off. And we had the most delicious, amazing sex. And then I bring that same, like those same moves and that same charisma to this person over here. It could not land for them whatsoever and be like, what are you doing? Like, that is not how I like to be touched. That is not how I like to interact with you. Not even asking me if like this. So we can create like this idea that of like perfection in the way that we interact. And we are imperfect beings and we're going to make so many mistakes along the way. So I would say, like, it really does come down to, like, again, that self-assuredness that you get to take care of yourself. And then how can you share in these experiences? So if you're having a jealous moment, let's stay on the jealousy piece. If you're having, like, this jealous moment and you're finding a pattern of this is happening often, and you're maybe, like, struggling with how to figure out why this is happening or how to, like, maybe, like, improve upon these experiences, do something different. Do something different than you have been doing. So if you've been holding it in, share it. Share it with your best friend. Even share it with the person that you're jealous with. And just see what happens. Give that person the opportunity to maybe, like, help you and help you through that jealousy. Be like, oh, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, that person that you saw me talking to that you were probably thought, like, we were, like, super intimate. That was my cousin. That was my cousin that we haven't seen each other in a while. And it was really great to see them. You can solve a lot of these tougher emotions sometimes by just sharing about what you're going through. So yeah, I would say with jealousy, there's a aspect of it that we want to, like, hold on to for ourselves because we feel like it's too much for someone else to take on. And yes. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. I love this conversation. Yes, we think it's too much for someone else to take on. And I just think this is a really weird thing about humans. I think we just buy so hard into our negative stories about ourselves. So jealousy is usually a negative story about ourselves in some way. And maybe not so much in your community, right? Because you guys are evolving beyond this, but I'm just going, like, bog standard, heteronormative kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So he's talking to this beautiful woman. He seems lit up. You know, he thinks she's more beautiful than me. That's, like, a really rudimentary example. Okay. And then what's going along with that? I'm not beautiful enough. I'm not this enough. Blah, 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 blah. As soon as we get on that track, there's some part of the brain, and maybe this is somehow reptilian brain, that just is convinced. It's like, I call it, like, it's like the abject. It's that part of the self that secretly knows it's worthless. Like, I kind of know that. I know that deep down, you know, that's the truth. There are other parts that think I'm a rock star, dude. I'm whatever it is, right? So we have all these different parts. I know I'm a rock star. I know I'm worthless. But that thing of, like, I know that it's an energy. It's a deadly energy. Very, very hard. And I think it's something to do with shame. And it's very hard to dispel that on our own. It's hard to do it. We have to somehow wiggle out of that blind spot, because I think it is a blind spot. I'm not saying it's not, there isn't, you know, that often that guy is attracted, or there are, you know, there are things that are happening in the world around us, but they're not all about us. For sure. That is for sure. We think they are, but they're not. So we get into these sort of funks with ourselves, these cul-de-sacs, these blind spots, and we have to find these ways out, right? So I like what you're saying. Try something different.
Yeah.
Anything different?
Anything. Like, whatever your pattern is, if it's working for you, great. But if your pattern is consistently running up against your edges, running up against your insecurity, and you're getting the same outcome, well, obviously something has to shift. And it doesn't mean you're going to get it right the first or third or fifth time, but it's practice. Like, even, like, I'll say I've been on, I have no idea how many different, like, podcasts I've been on at this point, but the first, like, few, they were clunky. I felt nervous. I wasn't sure what I was supposed to do with my hands. Like, there, it took time to figure out how to do this podcast thing with this other human being on the other side of the country. And how do I stay connected to them even though we're on this screen?
A second. Are you having a nice time with me right now?
I'm having a beautiful time with you, Jane.
Me too. Yes. I'm really enjoying it. Really enjoying it. So here we are having fun. Yay.
Yeah, exactly. And fun. Like, thank you for saying fun.
Yeah.
I feel like we put so much pressure on ourselves when it comes to everything.
Yes.
Work, yes. Relationship, our physical body, our diet, you know, making sure that we're like keeping up with the times, making sure that we're like keeping up with all the culture references. There's like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to just like do and be more and be bigger and do all these things. And back to like that child inside, like the play of it all, like having fun talking about a jealous moment. It doesn't have to be something that's like the end of the world or, oh my God, like what's going to happen? Like, hey, let's have like a fun conversation about sex.
Yeah.
Let's have a fun sexual experience where we're taking away like the need of like being Don Juan and like picking her up like perfectly and pushing her against the wall and both of you coming at the same time or coming at all and just play in the experience of being this human being. And you're interacting with another human being and you're going to butt heads by accident and someone's going to fart and maybe like, you know, just, but I think we lose the access to play the older we get. The older we get, we somehow are further and further away from that play aspect of this short human experience. I mean,
again, what is that about?
The world happens, you know. And
I know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about like, you know, the very end of the toothpaste, you know, when you have to like really work to get it out. it's like sex is running out and we have to like push this thing out. But I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's really,
I like
really
that analogy
weird.
About the toothpaste. I never thought about that. But yes, like we're like,
I mean, some of that's true, right? We only have so much juice in us, right? So it's at some point we peter out and mold and rust and, you know, fall apart, which in some ways quite sexy as well, but that's another podcast. just
have
rotting.
To have me back for that one, please.
Definitely. I think some of it's true, right? Life is short, but then again, like, life is short, so let's make it more dimensional than a piece of bad porn, you know. If that's our goal, then we're really fucking ourselves up, don't you think?
Well said. Yeah. I had this conversation with my partner 2 days ago, and this doctor that they interviewed, I think he was like 65 at this point, but he was talking about all of the people that he had like their last like day with in the hospital, in their hospital bed, and the regrets that people had. And it wasn't money. It wasn't the things. It wasn't the businesses that they built. It was the places that they didn't get to go, like experiences, like places they didn't get to see, and the relationships that they wish they would have cultivated stronger during their time. So when you look back, when I'll say for myself, when I look back at my life, I don't want to say, oh man, I wish I would have approached that woman at the bar, or I wish I would have gone on that trip instead of like saying, oh, I have to work or I have to do this other thing and missed out on that opportunity. There's a piece of like allowing some grace in our human experience, in the way that we relate to ourselves and the way that we relate to others, and bringing more play, bringing more fun, more play into life. That's my goal for 2024, is I want to play more. I want to have less serious moments because I know they're going to come. They always do. So why not be more intentional in the play side of the house?
100%. I mean, you never regret lightening things up. It's like you never regret going to the beach. You know, it's like you just never say, oh God, I'm so annoyed that I made that joke or that I played or whatever, that I initiated this game. You just never do. And I think what's quite interesting, and I haven't cracked this, but I think about it a lot, is the relationship between play and safety. I think they're very paired. We know this from kids, right? Kids who feel safe play and kids who are highly anxious don't. So, and you know, same goes for adults, right? The safer we feel, like our great friendships, the more silly we are. Same in, yes, in romantic relationships. My curiosity is around, can we reverse engineer it? Can we initiate play and therefore then feel more safe? And I think probably up to a point we can. And it's sort of bringing that playful spirit into the bedroom. And I don't see why this couldn't apply to a one-night stand or a long-term relationship, which is, I don't know, hey, let's have some really bad sex tonight.
Oh,
let's smash our genitals against each other.
Let's see how really bad we can be at this experience and laugh about it. I've honestly
blow job of all time. That would be really fun.
I've never done that, and my brain is now thinking about all the cool ways to play with that in that space. So thank you.
You might
for that idea.
Cursing me later, you'd just be like, ever since you told me about that stupid idea, your business is going to tank. Like, all those guys paying you to become a great lover, you know, it's just like. Well, I actually think, no, I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's really good.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you talk about that, is that I believe sometimes we go into, like, we'll say sexual experiences and feel like we're supposed to, like, perform, or we're supposed to, like, know exactly what to do. And you can actually, when, like, in the terms of play, you can actually use, like, one of these times of, like, being in an experience as education to be like, hey, let's dispel any of the, like, the performance or the role play or the having to, like, be awesome in this experience. And let's just discover each other's bodies. Let's ask each other questions. Let's see what it's like if I, like, bring in this particular toy and I'll use it on you. And my goal isn't to, like, turn you on. My goal is to see, is this an object that you'd want me to, like, bring in a future experience? And I don't know enough people doing that. I'd say that we're always, like, wanting it to be this movie scene that is, like, perfect and beautiful. And when we can actually use these as, like, educational times to then figure out what is working and what does turn us on, then we can bring that into the next time. We know, okay, this is an element that we can play with.
Absolutely. I like what you're saying, making space for exploring. And it takes me back to porn and how, I mean, I don't know, I haven't explored porn enough to know how little exploration there is, but from my glances, there's not that much exploration in the videos. They're very, very targeted. I'm not saying porn isn't fun. I do think it's fun in its own way, but it just doesn't have much of that spirit of exploration. It's just like sex sound like this. Orgasms look like this. You know, it's like it's quite prescriptive. I think it's quite limited. I mean, we know that, but it's just, if we're watching it a lot, it is going to shape our brains for sure.
And I could say that there are more directors producing varying types of porn that are more artistic or bring in more elements of exploration. Yes, they're still going to a lot of, or most of the porn will cater to a specific demographic, generally like men. And there's a certain, like, script that is followed in a lot of the porn. And, you know, again, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like, people are still watching it and still wanting that, but
it sure is working. That's for sure. Yeah. On some level, it's working. Yeah.
Then there's a lot of now, and a lot of them are actually women directors creating the porn that they would want to see. So it's a lot more sensual. It's a lot more charismatic. There's a lot more of the, the human connection, and rather than the more of the like mechanical, let's get to the part where, you know, there's fucking and pounding and like coming everywhere. And
the close-up, like, all the close-ups, the endless close-ups. Yeah. as a woman, I object to the endless close-ups. Are there any sites that you would recommend?
The answer is yes. It's escaping me at this moment.
You can always add it to let me know later and I can add it to
our notes. I'll let you know later. Yeah. There are, I would say I don't watch as much porn as I did like maybe when I was younger. But there are a few sites that colleagues have shared with me that when I saw them, I was like, oh, this is really lovely. Like it's as if there is just a camera set up in a room and two human beings who are actually living their lives are coming together in a really beautiful moment, rather than, you know, Rick Johnson, you know, coming in to like clean the pipes of, you know, the MILF next door.
Still, that is a classic. Come on, don't diss that. Don't diss that scenario. I mean, the double whammy of a hot guy and somebody who's going to actually fix your pipes. You got to remember this, like somebody actually going to help you with your housekeeping. Like, this is really hot, you know?
Did you know there's an entire genre of porn that you can find? I think it's even on Pornhub, of a man just doing like everyday like chores in the house. And
forget that enlightened shit. Get me that one.
He's like doing the dishes. He's folding laundry.
Yes.
Yeah, we all have our kinks.
Totally into that. I want to really make sure that, because I know I've already used up like a whole hour of your time, but I really want to make sure we talk about something that is rather serious, cunnilingus. Actually, it does get quite serious down there, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it feels to me that there are some men who seem really comfortable giving head to women. And there are some men who just aren't, as it's my experience. And it feels like the men who aren't, they're not necessarily not good lovers, but they seem to have a little bit of a block around it. And then I feel like if I feel like a man is trying to please me, then I get in my head. And then we're all in our heads, even though we're giving head. You know, it's not supposed to be that kind of head. It's kind of the head that gets you out of your head, not into your head. So how do we get into our bodies with head? What do you recommend to men? What do you recommend to women? How do we get better head going on down here?
Yeah, let's get better head. It might sound challenging for some, but actually talking about it, not just before, but during. So if you are maybe not feeling as confident in the way that you're, you know, providing cunnilingus, like share that. Be like, hey, I just want you to know, like, I've only maybe done this a few times and this is a part of my intimacy that I'm learning to build. So asking questions like, how would you like me to go down on you? Show me where you want me to kiss you, where you want me to lick you, where you want me to suck. And then for the woman receiving, you can also guide that individual. Be like, hey, I really like when you, instead of like putting a lot of pressure with your tongue on my clit right away, I like when you take the tip of your tongue and just come around, and like even using your finger to show like the motion, or even like guiding. You can even take their head and like guide, like, this kind of pressure is what I like.
But the thing is, you don't, I don't know, maybe this is just me, but I don't always know what I want until it's happening, and it changes very quickly because it can feel great, and then suddenly I feel overstimulated. I'm not quite sure why. Maybe it was too much on the clit or something, or too fast.
And it's sharing that.
But I don't always know. So it feels like I think this is one of the tricky things. It feels like there's quite a lot of expertise required on both sides, even in terms of communication, getting your mind to catch up with your body. Maybe it's about slowing down. I don't know.
slowing down's a big one.
Yeah.
Slowing down's a big one is also, you know, again, I keep saying like communication and sharing, but like sharing if like something's like overstimulating or if something feels good. If we don't share, if we don't, like if someone's doing something that feels really good and then they move to the next spot and you're like, fuck, that was it. I hope they go back there. And then they don't. And then there's like, maybe like resentment or frustration, like, oh, I was this close, or, you know, I've wanted to like feel what that sensation was. But if you don't share that, you know, that experience, wherever that spot was what you wanted, and have them come back there, you know, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. Or again, if you're someone who's providing cunnilingus and you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing down here, how quickly you might build your confidence by just saying, hey, it'd be really sexy if tonight you told me exactly how you wanted me to go down on you, and let's just play in this space and see what happens. Because again, like you said, until you've actually experienced a certain sensation, you might not know what you want.
Do you mind if I just quickly say this and
go back
to your thing? I think one of the issues is, for me, is that some of it is about the technical touch, but mm-hmm. some of it's about the spirit of it. If I feel like it's shifted from them being turned on, like if somebody's doing it because they're so turned on, they want to get in my body, great. If I feel like they're like doing me a favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's right. What you're talking about, like getting in your own head. And this is something I've shared multiple times. And my belief is that our turn on is really our own responsibility. So what gets me turned on, what gets me revved up, what gets me like feeling like, you know, aroused is my responsibility. Not yours. And when we can stay with our own turn on, with our own pleasure, then we're not concerned about this other person being responsible for that.
Oh, so that was like a bit of codependency in me, that I was worrying too much about them being turned on. Is that right? No, I want to catch it. I want to catch it. Yeah. I'm open. Yeah.
Like a little bit. Like again, like if you're so much concerned with the other person, then again, you're not going to be staying with yourself. Mm, you're going to be I wonder if I'm like, if I feel sexy in this moment, and how I'm smelling and how I look, and am I shaved? And all of a sudden, like, is this going to be enough for this person to get turned on? But really, your turn on is going to come from you.
Mm-hmm,
like I could be the most beautiful person in the world. I might know every trick in the book, but if
my mind's not there,
if your mind's not there, if you're not feeling well, if the kids are like shouting, and you're not going to be turned on no matter what I'm doing. So really, when it comes to like cunnilingus, any experience, when you allow yourself to like be present with your own feeling, your own sensation, and not always put the focus on or the responsibility on the other person, you now have better access to that turn on, and knowing how to like turn that switch on in moments when maybe you're not as turned on. So that's something I see often, is, you know, trying, like I just did a workshop in Mexico City, and one of the exercises we did was touching for your own pleasure. So rather than me, like, you know, touching my partner in the way that I think they're going to like, the way that I think is going to turn them on, I'm touching them for my pleasure, so that I can feel the sensation in a way that like invigorates me. So where most people, when they touch, they're touching with the front of their hand. That might be all well and good, but for myself, I have much more sensation on the back of my hand. So when I do this, I feel that way more than if I'm using the pads of my fingers. And that comes through my own self-discovery and my own practice. So I would say, like, also, like, if you want to get good at, you know, or better at cunnilingus, is also practicing through self-pleasure with it, whatever it is, whether, you know, whatever your body's made up anatomically, to see where you like certain sensations. Where do you like certain pressure? Where is it overstimulating? That way you can then help guide a partner to say, hey, I know that I'm, for me, I have a lot of sensitivity on the head of my cock. Like, yeah, you can stroke me till the cows come home and you might be down there for a very, very long time. But if you spend some slow, concentrated time with your tongue on the head of my cock, you're going to elicit a very quick response in my body. So it's things like that. It's also self-practice as well.
I like that. And the other thing I was thinking about was permission to not use full sentences, meaning, like, for me, I'm thinking about what's happening. I mean, I'm kind of making a joke out of this, but there is something here. Okay, so I'm thinking, how do I tell them that actually this isn't quite working and I might like something else? So I'm already like formulating it in this kind of heady way. And as you were talking, I was thinking, oh, why don't you use your voice a bit more like a dial? Like, so if we've got an and a it would be like, not going into, like, because it's also classic, like, you could go easily go into sex noises that can start out genuine and then you're like, oh, but I'll keep them going a bit more. Like, no. Okay, so it's in the, like, really staying authentic and genuine in the voice, but maybe not using words.
Yeah, and how do you know that? Or how do you dial that in? Is that's things that you can have conversations about beforehand, like during, like, conversations about sex. I want more people to talk about sex. I want more people to talk about sex. I want more people to talk about sex. Because when we talk about it, we dispel these, like, this idea that it's this hidden thing that we're only supposed to talk about with this one person. And what if things aren't great in that sexual dynamic? Now you're like, you don't feel the confidence to, like, share that and, like, learn from these experiences, like, from, you know, dinner conversation or going to workshops or things like that. So again, like, having a trigger word or, like, a safe word to say, hey, if I say, there's one thing I do with a lover where, like, I love having them edge. So, you know, we play with, like, that point right before they're about to have an orgasm. And then I tell them to say the word nirvana. And once they say that, I back off because I don't want them to
come. What if they say nirvana while they're coming?
Well, then, we have certain things lined up for when they. Don't
worry, we have a plan for that.
But yeah, like, it's saying, like you said, if saying, like, specific words are going to take you out of the experience, you could say, like, hey, if I say, like, during, you know, during, like, a time that we're, like, in intimacy, that means there's something that I might not like. But I want to encourage your viewers, even, like, yourself, to say, like, you do have a voice. You do have a voice that's very powerful and you can use it. And the more you use it, the more you're going to get what you want. If you have this expectation that this person's going to be able to read your mind or read your body or know exactly what you want, you're just going to have more chances of disappointment, more chances of that pressure of that experience having to be perfect. So use your voice whenever you want and know that by doing so, you are opening up the opportunity to a whole new realm of pleasure that you might not have had before.
Absolutely. And opening voices is not always easy, is it? I heard it's the last chakra to go if there is any sequence of chakras coming online. But I do think that it is a tough one. I know for me, it certainly has been and it's an ongoing. I was wondering, like, if it would be allowed to just tap somebody twice if it's working and once if it's not, you know. It's more of like a British approach, you know. Just a little pat on the back. If I think I'm gonna come now. Pat on the back.
That a boy.
Yeah.
Well done. You're doing good. I'm very proud of you. It is challenging, and practice. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is practice and knowing that you're not gonna get it perfect and you're gonna make mistakes, and that's okay. But there's one thing for sure. If you say nothing, then there's a good chance that you're not going to get what you want. There is a chance of you saying something and it might not happen exactly the way you wanted, but at least now it's out there and you have more of an opportunity than if you said absolutely nothing at all.
Yes, that's so good. I'm going to repeat it. So you up your chances of success in a relationship if you speak up, and you up your chances of having good sex. Hey.
Absolutely.
Something to work towards via lots of bad and sloppy sex. Bring it all on. Andre, it's such a pleasure.
I'm going to schedule bad sex right after this podcast.
I can't wait to have loads of bad sex tonight. It's going to be awesome. But Andre, I hope we get to do more podcasts together, because it's such a joy speaking with you. And I feel like I know you've got so much more information. So let's try and do that in the future if you're open to it. And meanwhile, let's wrap up with you sharing one sort of wish for your work, and then how you'd like to be found, if you'd like to be found.
Yeah, one wish for my work, and I had this conversation with my partner yesterday about this, is when I think about my purpose, and purpose can shift, but when I think about my purpose on this planet, I really feel like I'm here to help people awaken and step into their power. And it could be in sexuality, it could be in confidence, but to step into their power. So my wish for my work is that you take something away from our experience that you didn't know before, and being able to explore that on your own. Because while we might have access to, you know, sexual healing, to psychedelics, to other forms of therapeutic modalities, we are going to be the individual that allows for the success in our healing journey. All these other elements can help awaken those, but it really is going to be us that allows that to come through. So, my wish is that people take something away from the experience that they can now be curious about and maybe explore deeper with themselves, with a partner, with a lover. And if you want to find me, I have my website, which is coming-closer.com. And then I'm on Instagram, probably more than I'd like to be, at Coming Closer with Andre. And if you have any questions about my work and what I do, please don't hesitate to reach out. And Jane, thank you again for your time, and I'll definitely come back.
Yay. Thank you, darling. Thank you so much. Yeah.